Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush back. I know it's been a while, guys, but we weren't in hiding or in mourning. Well, maybe a little bit mourning, but that's not why we took so much time off. But we're happy to talk about everything that's on your mind. Phil, how have things been going in the past week?
Oh, good. I mean, we finished up our finals. We're now ready to celebrate the holidays, right?
I would like to think that, but I know there's some concerns on Marquette's fans' mind. We will talk about the very disappointing loss to Wisconsin coming up in just a bit, but I thought we'd start the show with the thing most recently in Marquette fans' minds, and that is the transfer, relatively surprising transfer, of Tracy Carter. And I know some people were really freaking out. I even saw the Fire Wojo hot takes so much on social media after Tracy Carter announced he was leaving. I, for one, Phil, am disappointed he's leaving, but I don't see this as a nuclear disaster for the program by any stretch. How about you?
I certainly don't see it as a nuclear disaster. I think, again, if you assume the surface statements to be true, I think it's a disappointing but logical conclusion that this happened, based on, you know, interviews that Tracy's given, what coaches have said, all that stuff. But there's enough kind of smoke around the whole thing that gives people who are inclined to dislike Wojo and his performance to date, gives them another thing to kind of hang their Fire Wojo hat on. So I don't agree with it, but I get the insane conspiracy theory logic behind it.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, it's really not that shocking when you look at a guy who is young, who loses his spot to a guy younger than he is, to think, well, maybe my future here isn't what I hoped it was a year ago. And that's really one thing. Now, Tracy, as you alluded to, Phil, he did say in an interview with Journal Sentinel beat writer Matt Velasquez that he wanted to be closer to home. He said, in his words, some things have happened back home, and I wanted to be closer to home. So that would be Philadelphia area for him. So there may be some personal reasons why he wants to be closer to home, but there's no doubt that his playing time had dropped, and he was probably never getting his starting spot back as long as Marcus Howard was healthy and on the roster, because the way he has emerged, he certainly looks like the point guard for the future of Wojo's program. And so from that perspective, you know, some kids, they just want a chance to start and play a lot, and I think Tracy Carter will get that opportunity somewhere else. And from that perspective, I kind of understand that he wants to leave. Like, selfishly, yeah, I would love for him to hang around and be a very good backup to Marcus Howard, but he didn't envision that for himself.
Well, and when you think about it, and this is in no way dismissing Tracy Carter. I think he's a talent. I wish he was still on this team. But to a certain extent, Tracy Carter got recruited over certainly with Marcus Howard, and to a certain extent with Andrew Rousey, right? I mean, both of them, all three of them play the point guard position.
Yep.
Rousey was taking some of Carter's minutes as well as Howard. You know, Tracy could have stayed and tried to fight through that, tried to win minutes back, but that in combination with other stuff, apparently, just it wasn't where he wanted to go. So the positive side, you look at this and you say, okay, it's not like Tracy Carter is leaving and Marquette has no one that can play the point guard position. We have two guys that can play the point guard position as good, and certainly in the case of Howard, you can make the argument better than Carter can play the point guard position. So it's not the worst thing ever, but it certainly hurts the depth. It certainly seems to add to some sort of perceived, and fair or not, trend around transfers and people leaving the program under Wojo that seems to have some segment of the fan base nervous and upset.
Yeah, although, you know, on the other hand, I don't think there haven't been really many or any guys that committed to Wojo that have transferred.
That's true.
Now, Sandy Cohen originally committed to Buzz.
He recommitted to Wojo.
Then recommitted to Wojo, so I guess you could say he has. But, you know, obviously, you know, well, I guess Tracy Carter did commit to Wojo, though. He would have been a year younger, so he would have been probably the first one who did not commit to Buzz Williams. But, again, I think Wojo's kind of caught in between sometimes improving the talent while trying to get some more, be more experienced and let this team grow a little bit. It's one thing, if you have some guys on your roster who are young and talented and you hope they grow, but at the same time, if you see a younger guy out there who's better, you don't want to not recruit him at the risk of offending the guys you do have. You want to get those better players, and that's a perfect example with Howard. He was a better player, and a chance to upgrade the roster, even if you were possibly going to hurt Tracy Carter's feelings by bringing him in. You have to bring in talented players when they come your way and you have an opportunity to do so.
Well, I think that
Wojo's just trying to make, he's trying to make this team better so he can continue to coach this team.
Well, and I think that's a really good point you make, Joe, in that, the talent level, again, this is Wojo, argument fair or not, Tracy Carter leaving, he's leaving, one, to be closer to home, apparently, but two, because he just wasn't going to get the minutes that he anticipated he should get or wanted to get. So, that's clearly a case of Wojo is improving the roster talent. And so these kind of bumps are going to happen as you continue to improve the talent on the roster across the board, because where the roster was previously, he was grabbing anyone he could, right, to bring. And again, that sounds like, oh, he was just picking any old bum off the street. But
he needed bodies though that first year.
Right.
I mean, gosh.
So he's selling minutes and opportunities and potential. And now that he's starting to get the roster fully filled out to a certain extent, and talent is increasing year over year, now that potential is turning into reality. And players like Tracy just decided that reality was not what they wanted. And, good for Tracy. I wish him the best. I think Marquette's going to miss him. He was probably Marquette's best on-ball defender.
Yes.
And defense is not a strong suit right now.
That's putting it kindly, but yeah, yes.
So I think Tracy being... And Tracy, I think, was going to have games where he was going to take over, right? He was a natural distributor. He wasn't really a shooter. He could slash. So I think we're going to have one less tool in the toolbox with Tracy off the team. But what's going to be most worrisome about Tracy not being there is quite frankly, the depth, right? We're now down to 9 scholarship players who aren't Sakara men. Now, do you think he burns his red shirt?
I do not think so, unless someone like Juwan or Caton were to suffer a major injury.
Right.
Then I think you pull off the red shirt and get him on board. But I think as it is now, I still think he would be burning a red shirt to get about 3 or 4 minutes a game.
Yep.
And I think that's not worth it. But again, if there were to be, heaven forbid, knock on wood, a major injury to anybody who plays the 3 or 4, then I think Sakar would be back in the mix to play this year. But, you talk about the depth, Phil, but, as I always say, like something I say probably every podcast, you're not going to rotate 10 or 11 guys.
Right.
So I think Marquette is at least down to 9 guys, which is probably a proper number on the rotation. And I think while, yeah, it is a bummer to lose a guy with Tracy's talent, especially when it comes to defense, I think one positive is maybe I think the roles are now a little more defined. And, I think it's pretty clear that Marcus Howard is the starting point guard. And Hanif is the starting shooting guard. And it's going to be Andrew Rousey and Dwayne Wilson backing those two guys up at one spot or the other. And so I think on the positive, I still think Dwayne Wilson has a lot to give to this team. I think maybe he and Rousey both were underutilized in that crowded backcourt. And so I think, while I'm going to miss Tracy Carter in some respects, I am excited to see what those guys can do with a little more playing time. Especially Rousey, because when Rousey gets going, he can hit a lot of shots. It was too little too late in Wisconsin, but he started hitting a few more threes to at least make it interesting.
Right.
He had the one game earlier this season when he went over 20 points as well. So I'm excited to see what Rousey does, and I still think Dwayne Wilson has a lot to give. He's been quiet this year because he's been buried a little bit, but I am hopeful that Dwayne Wilson seizes this opportunity to kind of reestablish himself as a key contributor to Marquette.
Yeah, I think Dwayne Wilson, given more minutes, he says all the right things, either in the press or on social media, and we've talked a little bit about it, but Dwayne Wilson seems to be the mature senior, well, I guess he's academically a senior,
right.
senior leader for this team that they need. So you would hope that that kind of off the court leadership would translate to some on court production, you know, because he's seen his minutes lower, and I think you're right. It's because there is a, you know, if he could play the three or the four, you know, we'd be seeing a lot of minutes out of him. But because he's playing a position that we now certainly a little bit less, but had a significant number of people with talent in those areas, you know, I think Dwayne was kind of squeezed out. So we'll see what he can deliver. The one bigger like overall concern I have, you know, I don't have any concerns about Wojo from the perspective of retaining talent or anything like that. The one thing I do have concern with is simply that now with Tracy Carter gone, there's all over again, we've got six brand new players that are going to be on the roster next year. The roster continuity has not settled out. I'd like to see us get to the point where we maybe have, you know, if you've got a big senior class or, you know, transfers in or whatever, and you're replacing maybe three or four players at a time, mm-hmm. this thing where you're turning over half the roster year over year is not conducive to kind of building a program, you know, from a solid foundation.
Yeah, it would be nice at a program like at Marquette. I mean, you're not going to be bringing in those one-and-dones every year like Kentucky and Duke do, that, you know, where the youth is never going to hurt you because the youth is always going to be so talented. At a place like Marquette, you know, obviously it's a nice program, but you need some experienced players. You know, all of Marquette's best teams, I would say, especially in the last 10 or 15 years or so, have had strong upperclassmen, really good juniors and seniors. And you need to be able to develop those guys and get them to near your top of the program. And but yeah, so that's why, you know, I've been saying for, you know, a while that I think Wojo is really targeting 2018 to like with the guys he's building, and with the guys like Helt and Cheatham, and I would have said Carter, are going to be seniors that year. Like, that was going to be a really experienced team. Now, who knows what it's going to look like now? Because, like you said, the roster keeps turning over and over again. And I wasn't going to get into recruiting too much because I'm really not sure where Marquette is looking right now. But Wojo will definitely have some options now with three scholarships still to play with for next year. You know, as we get into December and some guys across the nation decide that they are going to transfer mid-year like Tracy Carter has, Wojo actually has a scholarship available because the scholarship that Wally Ellenson had has not been used by anyone this academic year, so therefore they could give it to someone who came in at semester. So if there is someone out there, I have no idea who it would be, but if there is any type of player out there transferring at semester that fits what Wojo wants for next year, he has a scholarship available to give them, and that's not something every program has to offer, because most programs would have all 13 scholarships spoken for or one that has already been used by a guy who's left, so you can't give it to another player. So that's one option. I'm sure he'll look at some transfers after the season. Yes, grad transfers would probably be an option as well for one of those scholarships. I don't know if you want six freshmen on the roster next year. But, of course, he will still, I'm sure, recruit other freshmen. Jacob Epperson is a guy. We've heard his name a few times. His recruitment is kind of way up in the air as he's an Australian and really is just kind of getting a hold of who the top programs in America are. He's really not that familiar with it. So his one will probably go all the way into the spring. But Wojo does have some options, and I am curious to see what he does. But to your earlier point, Phil, it would be nice to add a little experience to next year's roster, because, you know, you're going to be without Fisher and Juwan Johnson, and, you know, it's going to be a pretty young roster next year.
Right. Well, and this is where the previous administration would go out and kind of mine the depths of the JUCOs, which, you know, Wojo has not yet gone.
It's not
that
his forte.
Route.
Yeah. It's just, you know, he, like, at Duke, I don't know how many junior college players they ever brought in when he was there.
Good question. I don't know any off the top of my head, but I can't.
Yeah, maybe they did,
Duke
but
expert.
I mean, with the academic requirements and, I mean, just the type of All-Americans they brought in, they never really had a need for many junior college guys. So I don't know how much experience, how many connections he and his staff would have in junior college ranks. So, but he has recruited some guys before. He hasn't signed any, but again, that's another option he may pursue.
Yeah, I would expect with one of these three scholarships, one of them has to be a quote-unquote veteran. It's going to be a grad transfer, or, you know, hopefully a grad transfer with, You know, well, I guess with the grad transfer, it's only a 1 year. So you probably get a grad transfer that.
Or you could do, like I said, the mid-year transfer. If
Yeah.
there's a freshman or sophomore who's like leaving a program right now, and
Yep.
then you would miss him for the first half of next year, but then you might get him for a year and a half after that.
Right. So with the three scholarships, what you could probably do for the sake of the balance, you could maybe get a grad transfer or a JUCO of some sort. You could maybe get a mid-year transfer that's going to have to sit out a year, potentially, or, you know. But, you know, there's certainly a case to be said that with three open scholarships in the roster makeup, there you can take kind of a not a flyer, but you can take a player and stash him for a year while they're sitting out and not have to have, assuming you can hit with the other two scholarships, not have to have a player that will play right away. You know, a la like they did with Andrew Rousey. Obviously he sat out last year, and now they have him contributing this year, which goes kind of back to the roster makeup where you're probably not going to go 11 or 12 deep anyway. So you can look a little longer term to try and again maintain that roster both balance and continuity because you know because it's going to be tough, right?
Yeah, it is going to be tough. And like without naming names, because I don't know who they would go after, but just looking at the roster makeup and what it's going to look like next year, I would like to have someone eligible next year. So either a mid-year transfer now, or a JUCO transfer, or a grad transfer, who is a power forward, or someone in the front court, because I think Matt Helt is going to need some help in the front court next
Yep.
year. I know there are some young guys coming, but how ready are they going to be as freshmen? I think Theo John may be ready to contribute as a freshman. How much, we'll see. But you know, it's going to be just Sam Hauser and Matt Helt experience-wise up front next year. So I think an experienced front court player would help. And then the other thing I think would be interesting, if there's someone out there who fits this description, would be after the season get a normal transfer, a
Yep.
guy, a guard who would have to sit out next year because the depth in the backcourt, assuming is going to stay the same, assuming that Marcus Howard, Andrew Rousey, and Dwayne Wilson don't have other plans for next year, but assuming they are all back as they are all scheduled to be, it's still going to be a pretty crowded backcourt with and Cheatham as well, assuming they're all back. You know, any new guards would just further crowd that. But if you had a guy come in who was sitting out 17, 18 and would start play in 18, 19, then Rousey would be gone, Dwayne Wilson would be gone, and then, you know, we would need some depth alongside Marcus Howard, who would be a junior, and Hanif Cheatham, who would be a senior that year.
Right, and again, like Rousey, whoever that player is, theoretically gets some continuity of practicing with the team. You know, going on road trips. You know, they're familiar and comfortable as opposed to some bright-eyed freshman who's come in and trying to contribute right away, which is not
Yeah.
always the
And if there
case.
isn't a and if there isn't a transfer out there who fits that description, maybe a freshman who would be open to redshirting
Right.
would make sense as well, in that regard. Because again, a freshman who is coming in next year and expecting to play, unless Wojo shockingly gets an All-American, I think it would be tough to crack the rotation next year with an experienced Howard, Rousey, Wilson, and Cheatham all back.
Yep, agreed.
So,
Agreed.
all right. So as we've speculated on recruiting, and again, we wish Tracy Carter well. He said he wants to be close to home, so I would speculate St. Joe's, Temple, LaSalle. There's plenty of options in the Philly, New Jersey area. I hope he finds somewhere where he can play. But let's talk a little bit more about Marquette, Phil, and let's not pretend that Wisconsin didn't happen.
Wah, wah.
But obviously, the game was disappointing because, A, Marquette lost, of course. But, you know, they had a lead at halftime, but, you know, watching the game, despite what the final score says, that was total domination from Wisconsin. Because really, Marquette was able to build just a nice lead because Ethan Happ played about 90 seconds in the first half. And when he was in the game, it was, I mean, it was men against boys almost.
Yeah, it was pretty atrocious. The second half defense, I mean, it was Matador defense. It was just a bunch of Olay, let them go by. And I think the most frustrating thing about that game was simply that Wisconsin wasn't running anything clever or fancy or unique. They were literally running pick and rolls, especially in the second half once Ethan Happ was in the game. And Marquette seemed to react as if they had never experienced that offense before and had no idea how to stop it. So it was
they saw the Michigan tape, apparently.
Right. But you know, the offense went a little bit cold in the second half, which didn't help. But I mean, the offense was sufficient. I mean, listen, if you're going to score 84 points against Wisconsin, you've got enough offense. But you can't be giving up something. What was it like? It's the highest point per possession I've ever seen in the second half. It was something like 1.73 or something ridiculous like that that Wisconsin had. I mean, it was almost literally every time they were down the court, they scored a bucket. So that first, I guess the bigger takeaway I take from the game, other than it sucked to lose to Wisconsin on your home court, especially when at the end of the game you started to hear the Bucky fans cheering and it just kind of made your blood boil. The takeaways, again, this feels like about the sixth time this season where we've had to talk about defense or lack thereof. And it's really, really concerning for the season coming, for the rest of the season, because we're going to play better teams than Wisconsin even, and we simply do not seem capable of playing any kind of coherent defense.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a great solution as far as how to fix this defense. I mean, it's simple to sit here on a podcast and say play better or get more stops, but I mean, there's more to it than that, and you know, some of these guys on the roster, they're just not great defenders. I mean, Luke Fisher struggles to defend. There's no doubt. I don't know if there's anything at this point in your career that you could teach him or tell him to make him a great defender. And I think the same goes for some other guys on the roster who, I mean, I'm not sure Reinhardt's a great defender. I don't know if Rousey can defend all that much. You know, Howard is, you know, he's undersized. Hauser's, you know, probably not a great defender either. So, I mean, what can you do when you have a bunch of guys who maybe, I mean, obviously as Paint Touch has pointed out, they went through some tweets that, you know, they pointed out, you know, this is the best offense Marquette has had since the Final Four team, but it's also one of the worst defenses in the KenPom era for Marquette.
Yeah. Well,
so yeah, it's like you just have, I guess, do we just have to embrace that this is a team that's just going to try to outscore everyone and hope they can hold their opponents under 90?
I think the podcast audience knows where I stand on this, that, you know, I've got some serious questions about Wojo's defensive either strategy or ability to coach. You know, is this a strategy problem? Is it a talent problem? I mean, I'm sure there's a combination. But if you had to pick one thing, yeah, what do you think it is?
I would have to say maybe if I have to pick one thing, I'd have to say it's got to be coaching, I guess, because I would think a great defensive coach would figure out a strategy that works. Not that you would be holding opponents under 60 a game or whatever, or some ridiculous points per possession number, like something under one or something with this talent, but figure out a strategy that can hold opponents under 93 points or something, you know. Yeah, if you ask me to pick one, I would have to say the coaching is failing because they're just getting beat on pick and rolls so often, and it has to be a little bit – it has to be better than that. Now, but that's not the only problem. I do think talent is part of it. I think there are just too many guys on this team who are just not great defenders, and that's an issue too. I mean, you know, Buzz's teams, while they couldn't shoot necessarily, those guys could defend.
Yeah.
I mean, they got after it on the defensive end. So I think the athleticism and the willingness to defend is part of it. And I'm just not sure Wojo has enough guys who have the quickness and athleticism and willingness to defend. And he just lost one of them in Tracy Carter.
Yeah.
So well, I think talent is part of it, too. But, you know, I know this is something you have harped on for a while, Phil, is that can Wojo coach a defense? And while I've been willing to be patient with it, I think the patience is running a little thin for a lot of Marquette fans waiting to figure out, can this team put together a half-decent defensive strategy that can help them win enough games to get to a tournament?
Right. Well, and there it's starting to feel a little bit like there's a stubbornness on Wojo's part that, you know, because we continue to run in these pick-and-roll situations, we continue to run Fisher, you know, when Fisher's in there and after the pick, he goes along and tries to stay with the guard. They almost pseudo switch. You know, and then all of a sudden the lane they give up the lane or whatever, you know, because this Wisconsin game, the Ethan Happ, I mean, he until just like the game after they played us, Ethan Happ had never hit a shot outside of the paint, right? So there was no concern about him shooting threes in that game.
He hit one this weekend, by the way.
He did hit one,
but that's beside the point.
You know, so there was no concern about him shooting threes, but we continued to employ the same exact defensive strategy that didn't work against Michigan, fell apart against Pittsburgh, had moments of issues against Georgia, clearly was to call it a dumpster fire would be insulting to dumpster fires in the Wisconsin game. We just kept running the same strategy. It wasn't until the last 5 or 6 minutes when the game was theoretically out of reach that Wojo benched Fisher. I guess benched is maybe not correct, but pulled Fisher out, changed the defense up a little bit, went with a little bit smaller lineup, and was a lot more aggressive. And Marquette, you know, for half a minute looked like, well, maybe they'll make it interesting. You know, so you wonder, is Wojo just not willing to change his strategy? Is he not capable of it? I mean, because if his defensive strategy is, okay, we want to deny threes, because that's what's going to hurt us the most. And if we give a few interior buckets up, so be it. But when Wisconsin shoots in that strategy, when Wisconsin shoots 65% from twos and 44% from threes, you're not doing anything well. like you pick something, like stop either twos or stop threes, like make a choice. Like it seems like he's in no man's land, and it's frustrating.
He is putting a lot of faith probably in, Fisher's ability to keep up with guards,
which he's not proven to have any ability to do so.
Yeah, I think you just need to accept your flaws and say, look, we can't do this, so we need to do something else. And is it time to do more zone? I know we hate zone and zone is for cowards, but is it time to mix it? Not maybe not go full zone all the time like Syracuse, but should they maybe try some type of zone and try to mix that in? Just to have a defensive look, just to see if it works at all.
I mean, depending on the team you're playing, I think they really need to go to a pack it in defense, right? Like, if you're going to give up threes, okay, you're going to give up some threes. But they're giving up threes now. So pack it in, you know, on the pick and rolls, you know, go under screens, have Fisher drop into the lane and give up the threes, you know, the long jump shots if necessary, but pack the defense in, don't allow drives, protect Fisher in the paint. I think that's the choice they have to make, but it's almost like Wojo has this blinder because, you know, Marquette's going with kind of the run and gun, the popular Golden State offense, right? Of everybody's a shooter and we're space and pace and all that stuff. It's almost like they have blinders like, oh, we've got to create a defense that defends that style of play, even though a lot of teams aren't necessarily playing that style. It's like everything is predicated around defending the three, which is good in theory if you're quick enough to do it, and we're simply not.
Yeah. And the thing is, they got two games coming up where you can probably try something new, and, you know, even if you don't do it well, you could probably get away with it because you're probably going to win these next two games, knock on wood, on talent alone. Right?
Right.
Because, I mean, if you look at these teams, Marquette's got coming up St. Francis and SIU Edwardsville, who is coached, by the way, by a former Marquette player, John Harris. But you look at the teams these teams have lost to. My gosh, St. Francis, they've lost. The only teams they've beaten were Longwood and American, who are both in the 300s in RPI, and they beat something called Chatham. I don't know. Looks like Cheatham almost. And then they've lost four straight to NJIT, Binghamton, Lehigh, and Stony Brook.
So they're not great.
All three of those teams. Oh, I'm sorry. Lehigh is pretty decent. They're ranked 101 in KenPom, but all those teams are 200 plus. So, yeah, I mean, St. Francis, I mean, at least I'll say this. Marquette has blown out its 300 plus RPI opponents so far. So any team where, you know, Marquette is pretty big favorite according to KenPom. They're a 26 point favorite against St. Francis per KenPom, and against Edwardsville, they are a they're a 25-point favorite.
Yeah. So these
are two games where Marquette should win on talent alone. So if you want to experiment with a zone defense or a different strategy defending pick and rolls, maybe it's a game to try it. While it may not tell you a lot, because Marquette's probably going to get a lot of turnovers and, you know, just by pressing a little bit, but and the other team just making mistakes. But these are two games where you could probably try something new and maybe at least, you know, dip your toe in the water, say, look, do we want to bring this to Georgetown on the 28th? We'll see.
Well, now, do you think so? The players had finals this past week. I'm sure they got those relatively out of the way early, do you expect that they will have some change? Because they'll probably have 4 or 5 days of concentrated practice before the game against St. Francis, and then they'll have all of this.
I would hope so. I mean, the coaches didn't have finals. So, I mean, so they've had to, I mean, they've had some time to look at some things. Say, look, guys, this is where we are right now, and these are the positives. These are the negatives. Let's try to fix something in time for the start of Big East play. What do you guys think we should do? So I'm sure they've come up with something. And so, yeah, there may be, while the guys I'm sure have been studying for finals and taking finals, they've still been working out and practicing. And they've probably had a few days once finals were over to figure out what they're going to do against St. Francis and Edwardsville. So, yeah, I would hope that they would try something new. At least, wouldn't you? I mean, I think if you're just saying, you know what, we'll be fine. I think that would be a little ill-advised. Yeah, you're gonna be fine against St. Francis and Edwardsville, but if you think the defense you've been playing over the first month and a half of the season is gonna get you a good record in the Big East, I think you're gonna be really disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going in with the, if they continue what seems to be the, well, we're gonna try and stop, you know, like, hold some of the bleeding back on defense, and we're just going to outscore everyone, that is not going to win in the Big East. I can tell you right now that this team will struggle in the Big East if we continue to play, at least play defense the way we have seemingly been playing. I'm not saying the strategy has to change, but either they've got to, you know, coach and play the current defensive strategy much better, or they need to look seriously at employing a different strategy if the talent just doesn't match the style Wojo wants to play.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to go out and win a lot of Big East games 90-85 or anything like that. I mean, you're going to need to get some stops on defense. You're going to need to stop some talented offensive teams. Especially, gosh, the top of the Big East is going to be so tough. I mean, I don't want to go this far yet, but I almost want to chalk that up as 8 losses. The Nova, Xavier, Creighton, Butler stretch. Not that those games are all together, but you know what I mean. Those top 4 teams, that's 8 games against those teams. And I'm almost fearing that it's a lock at 0-8. I'm not going to go that far yet. I'm hopeful that maybe they could go through those 8 games with 1-7 or 2-6, and then maybe things will be interesting the rest of the way. But if you do go 0-8 against those teams, that means you need to go undefeated against the rest of the conference to get the 10 wins.
Right.
Which is not happening at all.
No, that's not happening. And those 10 wins are not, they're not horrible, but it's certainly, you know,
you'd have no quality.
You've got to have at least 1 or 2 against the top 8. You got to win one of those at home, right?
Right.
And with this defense, the way it is, it's just not going to happen. But the crazy thing is, if the defense can just play not terrible, the offense is sufficient to get you there, right? I mean, so we're not asking for a defensive improvement, to your point, of epic proportions, right? We're not expecting them to hold teams to 60 points a game. If you can hold a team to 70 points, I think Marquette can score 80, 85 points, you know, depending on who the right team is. I mean, Marquette's offense is good enough. I mean, because Marquette scored 84 points and Sam Hauser didn't hit a shot, you know. Mm-hmm. So the offense is good enough. It's the defense that's going to make a determination if it can just play average.
And Marquette is still top 10 in the country in effective field goal percentage.
Right.
So they could score. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But, yeah, the big concern is, you know, can they get stops? Can they get rebounds? And Yeah, how many wins are they going to get in the Big East? Because, I mean, while I haven't totally closed the door on making the tournament this year, I mean, they've got to be pretty darn good if they want to get to 10 wins in the Big East, which I think is going to be a monumental task for this team the way they have played. But I haven't necessarily ruled it out happening yet. I still want to play the rest of the season.
Right, yeah,
I don't want to shut it
probably
down.
See how it works out. But you know what will be interesting is I think we'll know kind of where we stand after the first four games of the Big East schedule, right? Because you got Georgetown at home, Seton Hall away, Villanova away, and then Seton Hall at home. I think you have to be at a minimum 2-2 out of those first four games.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think so too. And it's tough because I think Seton Hall defensively is going to be really tough on Marquette.
Yep.
So, like, I would even say that if you can get out of that 1-3, while that would be disappointing, it would not be a total nightmare. Like, it would not be a shut the season down kind of feeling if you go 1-3 in that stretch. But yeah, I think, look, if you want to be a good team, you've got to get some good wins. And if you want to be relevant, you've got to beat some good teams. So, yeah, I would say hopefully you can go 2-2 in those first few games, almost locking down Villanova away as a definite loss. So basically what we're saying is you've got to beat Georgetown at home and get a split with Seton Hall.
Yeah. And boy, it's shaping up early to be a bit of a struggle. But again, let's see. Like you said, they've had a week of practice. They're going to have another week of practice and some games. Go home for Christmas, hopefully for a day or two, and then come back fresh for Georgetown, and then we'll see where it goes. That Georgetown game, they're on the struggle bus ahead of us. So.
Yeah, I mean, Georgetown is about as schizophrenic as you can get as far as a college basketball team, because they've had some terrible losses to Arkansas State. Well, actually, when you look back at it, Arkansas State really is only Georgetown's bad loss. Now, Maryland was bad because they choked it away, right? Like, they had what, like a 9-point lead with a minute left or something like that.
Yep.
But their other losses are to Wisconsin, which, hey, look, as much as we hate to admit it, Wisconsin's a dang good team. There's no shame in losing to them. And they lost to Oklahoma State, who I think is actually really good, under Brad Underwood, who came there from Stephen F. Austin. Oklahoma State is young, but I think Oklahoma State is very good. Other than that, and they just beat Syracuse and they beat Oregon. So I think Georgetown is a team that I would be concerned with in the Big East, because I think they're a team who, on their best day, could really beat Marquette pretty soundly. But you just got to hope the bad Georgetown shows up. Because Georgetown fans are about as self-loathing as any fans I know.
Yeah.
They get down really quickly, but they're very happy right now because they beat Syracuse last week. So I am still saying do not write off Georgetown as a team in the Big East just yet. I would not be surprised at all if they finish fifth.
Boy, yeah, it one and that, see, that's the tough thing. If you say the top four teams are quote unquote locks, right? And I know you're not literally saying that, but for
Yeah.
the purposes of the discussion, if you say the top four teams are locks and Georgetown is potentially the fifth team, I mean, right there, I don't see a way the Big East gets no way more than six, but I think likely five teams into the tournament. And if Georgetown is one of those, is a top five team, right there, that puts Marquette out probably.
Oh yeah, I think I'm not saying necessarily that those teams are locked at the top. Yeah, it's totally possible that one of those four between Nova, Creighton, Butler, and Xavier could stumble significantly in Big East play and finish lower than we're expecting. But if you're assuming those four will be in the top four in some stretch, then you're looking at Marquette, Georgetown, Seton Hall, and maybe Providence fighting between fifth and eighth, with the fifth team probably. I would say the fifth team in the Big East will definitely be in the tournament. And then, it's going to be a matter of how good is the sixth team's out of conference resume and who are their wins against. So, but certainly, we definitely appreciate the way the rest of the Big East has performed, taking out St. John's and DePaul.
Yeah.
But I mean, Nova and Xavier and Creighton and Butler certainly are boosting the overall RPI of the conference, which is certainly good for us because there's so many opportunities for good wins in the conference. If you look at KenPom, the way they rank B opponents and A opponents, almost all of Marquette's games but three are an A or B opponent. So there's plenty of opportunities for quality wins. The only games that are not good wins, as you would expect, both DePaul games and St. John's at home.
Yeah, so you're going to get wins, but that also means that you're going to have opportunities to have good wins, but that also means that nearly every game is going to be extremely tough. And again, not to depress everyone, bringing it back to the defense, but the defense is just not Big East tough yet. So it'll be interesting to see if we see any changes there that allow it to be adequate.
Yeah, I think it gives us the big concern as we look forward to the new year, Phil, and kind of wrap things up for today. But, you know, will Marquette put together a defense that is Big East quality? I think they definitely have an offense that is Big East quality. But if they're giving up 80, 90 points every game, getting to that 9-win mark, which is going to be critical to be in any kind of postseason discussion, NIT or otherwise, I think you need to get there. Well, maybe you can get in the NIT with 8 wins, but, you know, you get my point. You need to be able to win a significant number of Big East games, and there really are not going to be many easy ones, to get all cliche on you, but you're hoping you're going to sweep DePaul and St. John's. But after that, I wouldn't say there are many games that are guaranteed for Marquette. And the defense got to get fixed, and hopefully they figure something out here to close out 2016. So when we get ready for Big East play starting on December 28th against Georgetown, hopefully they've got something figured out and they're going to be competitive. I think they will. I think they still will be. Like I said, I'm not ready to give up on the season just because Marquette lost to Wisconsin. But yeah, there are certainly reasons for concern with the defense. But overall, I think the offense is the reason to be excited and optimistic that Marquette can be a pest in the Big East, a team that people aren't going to want to play. And, you know, if things go just right, maybe they can surprise people and finish fifth or sixth, and then we'll see what Selection Sunday holds once we get down to that.
Right. Well, and who knows? I mean, there's a string of, you know, just like we said, it's a tough slate of games that'll kind of tell the tale early. So that could go negatively, but basketball's a fickle game, right? I mean, maybe you get a win against Georgetown and Seton Hall and fight Villanova down to the wire, and maybe the team starts feeling confident about itself and
who knows, in the Big East play, yeah, suddenly maybe you get a surprising 3-game winning streak, and all of a sudden you're talking championship, not making the tournament. You know, and then all of a sudden you have 3 straight losses and you're talking about fire everybody. So yeah, there will be roller coasters of emotions throughout this Big East season, but overall I do expect for Marquette to be right around 500, and there are going to be 3 or 4 games in the end that will dictate whether they are going on the up and up, going up and maybe trying to get in that fifth place range and talking tournament, or they're going to be on the downside of missing the NIT. I think that's kind of, it's going to be a swing of like 3, 4, 5 games in Big East play, where are they going to get enough stops, going to make enough shots to get a close win, or are they going to fall short in all those games and, you know, be on the downside and only finish with 7 or 8 wins in the league. So
right.
It's going to be tough, but I guess we're going to find out. We'll see what they can do against these, 2 bye games to close out the non-conference schedule. Obviously, we're open to get 2 wins, of course, but I'll be interested to see if they try anything differently. I don't know if they would necessarily throw out everything and give everybody a good look at it on tape, but you want to change at least a few things and maybe give us some run and game action to see, look, are we going to be able to try this against Georgetown or Seton Hall?
And it'll also be interesting because who knows how – you know, Edwardsville and St. Francis, I mean, we've discussed that they're not great teams, so who knows if they can even, attack Marquette's defense in a way that tests Marquette's defense
at all.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like, even if you do have a nice defensive strategy, would you really know against them? You know, they say, well, it worked against St. Francis. I don't know why it's not working against Villanova. Well, there are reasons for that, but...
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, well, we'll see. I expect... the week before Christmas, with the students gone and it being somewhat cold, with a balmy -7 tomorrow morning here in Milwaukee, I would anticipate these games will be lightly attended, so nobody will really know if the defense is better or not.
Yes. Students will be on break. I'm guessing there will be plenty of good seats available for the St. Francis and the Edwardsville games. But, I don't know if the students will come back for the Georgetown game or not.
I would hopefully. Hope so. I would hope, but somebody's organizing, a bus from Chicago or something like that to bring them up for the game.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yeah, but I guess that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. Again, we always welcome your comments. If you want to give us some feedback, hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-F-23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. You can also go to our Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post the podcast on there. And, of course, review us and rate us on iTunes where we post the pods. Phil, hope you have a very Merry Christmas. I guess we're going to come back and do this. Yeah, but we'll have another one before the Georgetown game and break down Big East play.
Yeah, we can talk about all the Christmas presents we got and then talk about Georgetown.
I'm expecting Cole myself, but
oh well, yeah, but I mean that's a given.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. Nothing. Don't get Owen anything red.
No, that is expressly forbidden.
All right, happy holidays, everyone. Have a very Merry Christmas, and we'll check up again with you just before we get started with Big East play. Until then, seashells and balloons.